In April 2026, the acting U.S. Attorney General took steps to reclassify a number of medical marijuana products under the Controlled Substances Act. But questions remain about the extent to which the rescheduling will increase much-needed research on marijuana. I'm Stephen Morrissey, Managing Editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Rebecca Haffagee, a professor in the Department of Health Policy and Management at the Yale School of Public Health. Dr. Haffagee has co-authored a prospective article about marijuana rescheduling and clinical trials. Dr. Haffagee, before this announcement, how was medical marijuana classified, and what did that classification mean for research and for prescribing?
Yeah, so before this final rule, or some call it an order, medical marijuana was scheduled as a Schedule I substance under the Controlled Substances Act, along with all marijuana. That meant under the categories for the Controlled Substances Act and its classification system that the drug had a high potential for abuse and no accepted medical use in the US. That Schedule I designation for medical marijuana prior to the final rule meant a number of things. Many states had authorized the medical use of the drug. And so we had, I think, by many accounts, 33,000 plus prescribers that were prescribing the drug despite its Schedule I status. But for research, this status had a number of consequences. It meant that researchers could not obtain a diverse and robust supply of the drug. Under an international treaty, the Drug Enforcement Administration had authorized only one supplier of the drug historically. That, I think, improved the diversity and array and modes of administration of the drugs that it was supplying, particularly in recent years, but that still was limited. There was a rule change in 2020, a change in DEA policy that allowed them to authorize or register six additional companies to actually supply the drug. So that modestly improved the supply. But overall, that's very few suppliers that are supplying the drug. And the types of the chemical compositions, the modes of administration that they could provide did not match what was on the consumer market and being sold within the states that allow medical marijuana to be sold.
And then what change did the Trump administration make in that policy, and what explanation did it give for making the change?
So, the change that the Trump administration made was to reclassify medical marijuana and also future FDA-approved marijuana products to a Schedule III status. So, they went from Schedule I to Schedule III. Under Schedule III, this classification suggests that there is a moderate to low potential for physical dependence of the drug and that there is some medical use for the drug. In making this final rule and rendering it, the Attorney General was acting upon an executive order that President Trump had issued in December of 2025. That executive order was directing the Attorney General to make this rescheduling change, and it cited the reason as an increase in medical marijuana research to better inform doctors and patients, the millions of Americans that are actually using the drug medically. So the goal was research and to try to enhance and make more robust the research enterprise so we understand the benefits and drawbacks of the drug.
So, in fact, what's known about the effects of medical marijuana, including its safety and effectiveness, and where are there still gaps in knowledge that this research might fill?
So, in issuing the final rule that we're discussing, the Trump administration was actually referring back to a recommendation that was made by the Department of Health and Human Services in the prior administration. So, that was in 2023, whereby the Assistant Secretary for Health and the Department of Health and Human Services conducted a comprehensive review of the literature, the scientific evidence around medical marijuana, the eight factors that go into the consideration for where a drug should be scheduled on those controlled substances schedules. And they concluded that there actually was at least some credible scientific support for marijuana's efficacy in treating a number of conditions. Those include pain, anorexia related to certain medical conditions, and nausea and vomiting. There was some evidence, but somewhat mixed on the treatment for chronic pain. That is a large indication for patients using medical marijuana. So, that would be an area, for example, where there are gaps. And we think that there is some medical use potentially, but we need to understand that better to make a fully informed decision.
So you say in your perspective article that although you expect the rule will have some benefit, it won't be the game changer that many people have predicted. So starting with the positives, how could the rule reduce burdens for investigators and facilitate research?
So we discussed two of the chief hurdles to researching medical marijuana in the prior regime, so when it was a Schedule I substance, and those being the limited supply of the drug for research and also regulatory barriers that researchers in particular had to go through, had to be subject to in order to conduct that research. So the rule could do a number of things, and specifically the rescheduling to Schedule III on those fronts. One is that it can bring more suppliers into the fore, and specifically state-licensed medical marijuana companies. So these are companies who are already manufacturing and producing and making available, distributing the drug in state markets for retail sale to consumers. And they now have the opportunity to apply to the DEA for a Schedule III registration. The DEA is also in the rule required to do a few things to expedite those applications. They'll be reviewed more quickly if they're submitted within a certain amount of time. So the rule is attempting to make that process of applying for the registration, which is less onerous than the Schedule I in the first instance, but to also make that move more quickly so that more suppliers could apply for those registrations and potentially supply the drug if approved. Another piece on the research regulatory burdens barrier is that a number of the restrictions around storage, record keeping, security of the product when you're conducting research have been eased and are less onerous under a Schedule III status than they were under a Schedule I. A few of those had been lifted in a 2022 congressional act that lifted some of the barriers, but not all of them. And so this Schedule III rescheduling designation takes it one step further and makes it a little easier for researchers who are conducting these large-scale clinical trials to be storing, securing, dispensing of the drug, those sorts of things, and able to actually conduct the research a little bit more smoothly.
And then, what challenges or limitations do you think are going to persist despite the rescheduling?
So on the first barrier we talked about, that supply, although state suppliers now can be brought into the fore and can apply for the Schedule III DEA registration to supply the drug, they still are going to have to overcome a number of barriers. It's unclear whether they'll be motivated to submit these applications, whether it would really be a financial, like good business decision, because they need to feel that they will benefit somehow in obtaining that registration and have some kind of return on investment down the line. That's not entirely clear. Then they also have to meet rigorous manufacturing and testing requirements from the Food and Drug Administration for clinical research involving investigational drugs. And those are fairly demanding. So not all small suppliers, for example, are going to want to go through those hoops. So there's a number of reasons to think that that may not enhance the volume of medical marijuana that is supplied for research from that source, that new source, the state suppliers. I think the biggest barrier, however, that we haven't talked about yet is funding. So funding for clinical trials is very needed. Clinical trials are extremely expensive. You need the expertise, the infrastructure, and the research to conduct those kinds of trials on drugs. Medical marijuana has historically not had as generous of funding, and most of the funding has come from the National Institutes of Health. That has increased over time, but it still is vastly below the amount that would be needed for us to rigorously evaluate the drug, its benefits, its harms, and to really understand all of the different types of drugs that are on the market already in states, for example. So this rescheduling rule does nothing to affect that funding, to enhance it, to make sure it continues on its growing trajectory, but really actually accelerates that funding. So without that, the rescheduling rule may not bring more researchers into this area and be able to actually still fund these expensive trials, have the infrastructure, the space, the resources to even like purchase the product, which is very expensive for the research. And there's some indications that under the current administration, some of this National Institutes of Health funding has slowed or abated in certain fields. One key step that happened was a cancellation of the contract that the Drug Enforcement Administration had with that original supplier at the University of Mississippi. And that is critical because that product was actually subsidized by the government. So when researchers used it, they did not have to include in their budgets as much money for the actual supply of the drug and sourcing it. Now that contract has been canceled since 2025. It may be renewed, but that's an example of where funding may even have actually reduced in recent years.
Finally, given what you've just said, what options exist for expanding funding for these clinical trials, given this limited federal support?
Research is absolutely critical. And I think the motivation behind the executive order and the final rule and really focusing on research were wise and prudent and much needed. But again, without this funding, it's going to be difficult to, I think, really ramp up that research. And so, what do we need? I think more National Institutes of Health funding for sure that really grows and accelerates beyond its trajectory as of the decade or more. I think adding to that state and then private funding streams increasingly would be very helpful. And states should want to understand the implications of the products that they are already marketing. As I think we've mentioned, there are now actually 41 states that allow medical marijuana legally in their states and have prescribers that are prescribing it for qualifying conditions. And so, for states to also become involved and want to understand the benefits and the potential harms and the most efficacious indications for the drug, that would be really helpful and I think appropriate. I think more federal support for the research-grade marijuana as well, that supply. So, perhaps reactivating the University of Mississippi contract and others to make that product a little cheaper for researchers to be able to purchase in their grants to study the drug. And then finally, I think some incentives for state licensed manufacturers to enter into supplying research grade medical marijuana and going through some of those processes we talked about to get our Schedule III registration. There may be a few incentives already. There may be some tax incentives. It's a little unclear still as around this rescheduling that maybe they could benefit from. A few states are actually requiring the manufacturers to go ahead and get this federal Schedule III registration. But I think some other financial incentives, especially for smaller companies where this is a big lift for them to enter this space. So that would be much needed and helpful as well.
Thank you, Dr. Hafaji.